And
that's why I think it's generally the best way to do it is just to be consistent and start this year. The bad guys that show up now are the Midianites. And again, this, it harks back a little bit to something that I guess has been bothering me, which is, how do we assess the character and quality of the Midianite soul? You know, on one hand, we have, you know, the Yitro Kohen Midian, and on the other hand, we have the situation where the Midianites keep popping up, you know, Lara for negative purposes. And here's something very interesting, which I'd like to show you about the Midian. Now, I think this is at the, what the Gra would call the Sod level. This is at a Kabbalistic level. I don't know how to interpret it, because I don't believe it has a lot of times when you see parallelisms in the Torah, they're there because the author has said, all right, the Torah, the Navi will have looked back at the Torah, seen that words were used a certain way, and will copy the words of the meanings. For instance, Shmuel. When I showed you, I don't know if you were here for that shiur, Shmuel, when he introduces Devorah, she is introduced with the same terminology, and the event that she is introduced with is the same as Shmuel's. She's between Beitel and Haramah, just like he was. I show you a bunch of words, we even had some numbers, 10,000 here, 10,000 there, the battle of the Mitzvah, the coming of the enemy, the victory, Vayihamem, and God confused them or fought against them, Vayichnan, he suppressed them, all those words are the same because he was trying to make Shmuel, the author of both Svarim, I believe, was trying to make a not only a textual comparison, but a thematic comparison. This is Shmuel, this is me, and now that we've established what's the same, let's analyze the story and see what is unlike. Was dissimilar, and why the results therefore are different. I'm going to show you something which is also similar, but what it means, I couldn't tell you. I really feel it's at a Kabbalistic level, but it's too important to miss, and therefore I would like to show it to you anyway. Let's read just the first few sentences of Perek Vav, of chapter 6. And by the way, this Gidon stuff is great stuff. We're going to talk about angels. There's a big deal about how angels, what exactly is a malach? What is an oat? And why Gidon would demand an oat? And not only one oat, but a second oat. And what is Nevuah all about? We discuss all kinds of, Gidon is the crux of Sefer Shoftim, but it's also the crux of very many philosophical concepts that need to be reviewed. I'm not sure I have expertise in these concepts, but at least I'll be able to give us an introduction, open up conversation. So it's going to be certainly an interesting few weeks. Eat that, I'm just kidding. So if we take a look at, let's read the first few psukim. Vayasu b'nei Yisrael k'ra b'nei Hashem. Vayitneim Hashem b'yad Midian sheva shanim. So the Jews do bad in the eyes of God, and God gives them to Midian's hands for 7 years. Vataz yad Midian, and the Midianite's hands are strong, Yisrael mitneim Midian, asu b'hem b'nei Yisrael, et ha-min harot, asher b'harim, they make the caves, v'etam arot, v'etam tzadot, other kinds of caves, and mitzadot, of course, from the word, you know, mitzada, these are the battlements, I guess.
The fortresses.
Right. Minharot, by the way, probably come from the word nahar, which is probably a cave where a river runs through it. It's used in modern Hebrew, I believe, a minhara is used to describe... I believe it's used to describe a tunnel that has an opening on both sides. I believe it's in Minhara, but I'm not sure.
It's a tunnel.
Right, as opposed to just a cave. Rashi describes it differently. He says Minhara is one, or Radak says it's one where the hole was at the top, as opposed to a cave where the hole was on the side, probably from the idea that the water would flow into it from the rain and then create a wet, you know, wetness inside. But either way, these are various hiding spaces. V'haya im zara Yisrael, if Israel would plant, Va'ala Midian v'Amalek u'bnei Kedem, so Midian would come up along with Amalek and Bnei Kedem. Who the Bnei Kedem are not totally clear, maybe the Ishmaelim. Va'alu alav, and they would attack them. Va'yachanu aleihem, and they would camp against them. Va'yashchitu et yivul ha'aretz, they would destroy the produce of the land. Ad bo'acha Azah, all the way down to Aza, which means the Plishtim at this point are not important nations. That is, their border is clearly only until Aza, which is not going to be the situation during Shem Shem's time. V'lo yashiru mechiyeh b'Yisrael, and there was no food in Israel. V'shev v'shor v'chamor, and also there was no horses. Seh is a lamb, right? A shor is an ox or a bull. V'chamor and a donkey. Kihem u'miknehem ya'alu, because they came with their own cattle, herds. V'awolayem, and they came with their tents. U'va'u kidei arbel arov, and they came like locusts. Lahem u'lugmalehem in espar, there was no limit to them. V'yavou ba'aretz v'shachata, and they came to Israel to destroy it. That is, it was a scorched earth policy. It wasn't even a scorched earth policy, that's different. Scorched earth policy is when you're conquering a nation to make sure that anybody that you... that nobody could come behind you and then take quarters from the land, so you destroy the land. It's a military tactic, but the goal is victory. Here, the military tactic, it's not clear that victory over the Jewish people or a territorial conquest is in the making. What seems to be the focus is simply to destroy, to make it unbearable for the Jews. It's not clear that the Midianites have major territorial aspirations over Israel, or they feel like get away with it.
But it's still going on.
What's that?
It's still going on to make it miserable for the Jews.
Yeah, well, it's a known tactic, yeah. Right? By Yidal Yisrael...
So wait a minute, excuse me.
Yeah.
So when they came up to the land, the
mostly Midianites, yeah.
With all their animals, did they eat the produce?
That, yes. Yes and yes.
They ate and destroyed.
Both. Well, I assume whatever they didn't eat, they destroyed. By Yidal Yisrael Ma'od and Tnei Bidyan, and the Jews became very, the word Dal poor, lowered from in front of Midyan, by Yisrael Kubin Yisrael Hashem. And then, of course, the Ish Navi is sent, the Malach comes. This is great stuff here, by the way. The Malach incident is very similar to the Malach incident in Shimshon, right? So she's out there, and they put something on the rock, and the fire goes up on the rock. And of course, we'll do a comparison there and see the differences in the story. But there's a lot. This is very rich. This is the center, this is the apex of the Sefer. And we'll spend a decent amount of time analyzing it, because there are comparisons to Shmuel. If you remember, there's a part where Gidon goes down. They're against this battle of Midianites, so they go down and they hear these people talking about a dream, and then he goes down just with his single Na'ar, and they create this big ruckus, and they start killing each other. That's very similar to Yonatan. Remember, Yonatan goes down to the camp of the Midianites, and does the, I believe it's the Midianites, it's not the Plishtim, I think it's the Midianites, and does the same thing. So there's a lot of textual comparisons between the events, and thematic comparisons. But again, I don't want to, I'm just opening opening the door to a lot of things we've discussed. Pesach comes into play very strongly. But what I really want to discuss then is just an opener, which will take us to this Kabbalistic idea, at least I think it's Kabbalistic. Let's go back to the song, Shirat Devarim. And I'm thinking specifically of the Ya'el event. Pasuk, Kaf, let's start with Kaf Hei.
Perik Hei.
Or actually, Perik Hei, Pasuk Kaf Dal is a good place to start. Kaf Dal, 24, 5, 24. So it says, Tivorach Minashim Ya'el. Blessed from women is Ya'el. Now, I think, Anne, you were here for the shir on this. Were you also here, David? I think you missed the shir. Right, so this is pretty racy stuff. So I'm not going to go through it again, but Chazal are really quite clear on agreeing with what the Pesukim was saying, which is that... you were. So she seduced him and killed him. I mean, that's how he died. So, Tvorach Minashim Ya'el, Eshet Tevra Keni, Minashim Ba'ol Tvorach. She's more blessed than the women in tents. Mayim Sha'al Chalav Natana, he asked for water, she gave milk. V'sefaladirim, in a beautiful bowl, Hekriva Chem'ah. Oh, please, I have there's an English one, please.
Yeah.
I think you'll find it a little easier to work with. No problem at all. We are in Judges 5:25. Do you want an arch scroll instead, or you're up there? Mayim Shalachal Natana B'Seifel Avirim Hekriva Chema. She brought him butter. Yadali Atej Tishlachna, she sent her hand to a peg. Vimina lehalmut amelim, and she took a worker's hammer. Vahalmas Tishral macharosho, and she stuck into his head. Went right through into the ground. And then the psukim get quite explicit, and they say, Ben Raglel, between her legs, Kara Nafal Shachav. He bowed, he fell, he slept. Ben Raglel, Kara Nafal. He bowed and he fell. Ba'asher Kara, where he bowed, Shan Nafal Shadu. That's where he died. So essentially, what she had done was, at the end of the battle, she had seduced him. Chazal is quite clear about it. And the words, honestly, I mean, you can't really miss it. I mean, it's pretty modern. Ben Raglel, between her legs, they fall, she sleeps, he sleeps. So essentially, she seduced him. He was tired, and that was how this little woman was able to stick a tent peg through his head.
What just occurred to me? Didn't they used to put the heads on spikes?
Well, more like sticks, but I'm not sure that's what. I don't think she cut off his head and put it on his body.
No, it sort of scratched it, doesn't it?
Could be. I just say that, you know, for a woman in a tent. She used what she was able to use to kill him, which was herself. And well, I think he was had it. I don't think he had a heart attack or anything. I think he just had it to the point where her seduction left him helpless, really. I mean, tired to the point of exhaustion. And therefore, she was able to get away with what she was able to get away with. Otherwise, I think she would have had a hard time against Sisera putting a tent peg through his head. Even had he just drank a little milk, I suspect that he would have been able to manage the situation. As a general of the armies, I'm sure he was no wimp, and Yael was probably a typically sized woman at the time, probably not very powerful. And right after this whole event, this battle of the Canaanites, comes the Midianites. And now here's where we get to the, again, I don't want to say Kabbalistic, because I don't mean it in a, you know, I know when people say Kabbalistic today, so that, it's like Madonna with the words, with the Lamed Aleph tattooed on her. I'm not talking about that kind of Kabbalism. That's not my forte. I don't know what it means. I don't know what they think it means. I'm talking about Kabbalism in the sense of trying to figure out there are secrets in the Torah, there are patterns in the Torah which repeat themselves, not because they, and the goal of them is not magic. The goal of them is a deeper understanding of how it is we're supposed to exist and how the world works. And let me take you to one of them. Let's go over to Bilam's story, which goes back to the Torah. In Parshat Balak, it would be in the Bamidbar, which is Numbers chapter 23. No, actually, chapter 24, verse 1. Just to give you a refresher on the story. Thank you. Just to give you a refresher on the story before we actually read the text, the Jews had just conquered the Amorites. They're taking the long way around to get into Eretz Israel because they can't go through Edom's territory. And they have to go the long way around. They skirt Moab. They go around Moab. They're not allowed to attack Moab either because Moab is the child of Abraham as well.
I'm sorry, chapter 23?
Chapter 24, verse 1. So they go around Moab, and then they come to territory that had used to belong to Moab, which again was then Avram, Lot being Moab coming from Lot being a child, or at least an adopted child of Abraham. So that land was off limits to the Jewish people. That was a gift to Avram to his other children, right? The Jews weren't the only recipients of gifts. Maybe we got the best one, but the other ones of Abraham's children also got some very nice gifts, and we were not allowed to go into Moab's land. Fortunately for us, Sihon, who was an Amorite king, probably stretched out from Canaan itself, from the old land of Israel, comes out and conquers that land, takes it away from Moab, probably 100 years before the Jews got there. That turns it into a no-man's land, essentially. It's a Canaanite territory now, Amorite territory. And the Jews take it away from them. So they conquer the Amorites, but good. And then Moab is so scared of the Jewish people. Now, what they're scared of is unclear, because the Jewish people have already made it clear to them that they're not about to attack Moabite land. They're just not going to. So what exactly is the motive for Moab is a separate issue altogether. They are in cahoots with Midianites, but they get this guy Bilam, who was a Navi, a prophet, to curse the Jewish people. Whether his curses were successful or unsuccessful, You know, they were ultimately not as successful as he wanted them to be. But as we read his curses and we think of them as brachot, I can tell you there are hidden curses inside, which I'll show you what they are. We know where Bilam comes from. Bilam comes from Aram Naharayim. He was a relative of Avram Avinu, which brings on a whole different kind of... So essentially the three nations that get together to attack and destroy Israel. Well, he's related, he's from Aram Naharayim, which would put him as a distant relative of... he's a Lansman. He's probably... He is Semitic. We could prove that he's Semitic. Whether he is directly, you know, whether he was a distant cousin of Terach, or maybe even one of Terach's kids' side, it's hard to say. But Chazal and the Pesukim put him clearly as a Semite, and as, a person who was pretty in tune with God, much as Lavan was. I mean, think about Lavan. Lavan was also, he was a Navi, not a true Navi, but God did speak to Lavan as a child of Terach, and Terach's kid. There was a certain spirituality built into that people, and they were able to perceive things that when God wanted them to. What? On the website.
Didn't Hashem also speak to
Avimelech? Yes, he did. Yes, and I don't want to say Lavan is a Navi. There is a sense of spirituality. Betuel, Terach's kids, Eilat Toldo Terach. You know, these are the descendants of Terach, and any one of them, I believe, could have potentially achieved a state of spirituality. Avram actually did it, but that's like two kids who are geniuses, and one decides, you know, to go to law school or become a famous doctor, and the other one decides to not. That's really a choice. Because Judaism wasn't, I think, and I don't want to wax too philosophical, but Judaism isn't given as a gift. Judaism is given to one who grabs it. What's the raya? The raya for that, the proof for that, is when Moshe Rabbeinu was at the burning bush. So if you look at the words closely there, what does it say? It says, and Moshe saw the burning bush, and he went up to see the... And then Hashem says, because you went up to see, I'm going to start talking to you. Mm-hmm. Had Moshe not gone up to see, what's the implication of the words? Is he not gone up to see, then he would not have talked, which means that Moshe had been less curious, less desirous of following his beliefs, then he would not have been gifted with the gift of taking the Jews out. God would have waited for somebody else to come along, no matter who, and maybe that would have taken the 400 years rather than the 220. So that concept of religion and the gift of religion not being a free ride, I think, is well ensconced to our religion. So here's Bilam. I'm saying that I think that's a central concept of Jewish philosophy. It's true by Abraham, it's true by Moses, and what I'm speaking now of is not specific everyday philosophy. I'm speaking more biblical philosophy. I'm saying how it was for Moshe and Avram. Whether those things also apply to us today may be very, very true. But I think it is too. But I always keep the shiur to a more abstract... I'm not much of a pulpit rabbi. I like to keep things at the abstract biblical level. Whether people can see the modern in that, in the biblical level, which I think is important to do, is true. I believe that the start of Judaism necessitated somebody finding it. I believe Avram discovered God, not vice versa, and the same with Moshe as well. And had they decided not to discover them, even though they might have been great and genius people, then God would have tried again somewhere else. And one of the places where God was trying was in the children of Terah, who was an idol worshiper, but at least he was looking for God. At least he was looking for God in all the wrong places. And therefore, if it wasn't going to be Avram, it would have been somebody else at that line. Baruch Hashem for us, thank God for us. It was Avram, but it would have been the first one to step up to the plate and take a swing at the ball. Well, and hit the ball as well.
No, but not following through on that too much.
I think it is a fundamental Jewish concept, and I think it's a fundamental moral concept as well. I really do. I do. Yes, absolutely. I believe so. Now, Bilam is this. So what's interesting here is you've got these three major enemies of the Jewish people. You've got Moab, Avram's kids. You've got Midian, Avram's kids. Now, the interesting thing about Midian, by the way, I realize I'm sort of going off on tangents, but all this is important to understand why it is that Midian is so important. That is, if we have the central Jewish shofet leader, which is Gidon, it's important to understand who the central enemy is, and Midian. Because normally when you think of Midian, you think good guys. In fact, the hero or the heroine of the story of Dvorah was a Midianite. Isha Chavrat Kemi. Sure, broken off from the main tribe, but it was a Midianite. So it's something that I've talked about in class. How do we
know that?
What's that?
We just know she's married.
Yeah, but they're usually kept in tribes. And also, and we believe that Hever was probably playing double spy also. You know, we believe it was Hever who instigated. I think it's our impression that her husband was also playing, I think her husband, the fact that, I think her husband probably knew that what she was doing in the tent. I was a little misupak in the class. I didn't want to be conclusive in the class because I think the psukim are not conclusive about Hever, but I believe he was a good character as well. Maybe quite not quite as heroic. But I would have said that Yael was also a Medjanite. So, to my mind, when you come across anything with the Midianite people, you have to wonder, hey, good guy or bad guy? So now let me take you to the interesting part. Here's Bilam coming to the first Jewish people. Now, Bilam has these four mashalim. Now, mashal is, of course, a parable, but it's another word for a prophecy. It's a prophecy in a parabolistic sense. Let's look at the third prophecy. This is the ultimate prophecy. And this is where he tries to curse the people, Jewish people, but doesn't, but fails. Or does it? Let's look at the word. Vayar Bilam, and Bilam saw, we're in Pasuk Aleph, 24:1. Vayar Bilam, and after two failed, quote-unquote failed attempts, cursed the Jewish people, Kitov Beinei Adonai Levarech et Yisrael, that it was good in the eyes of God to bless Israel, Velo Halach Gifam Bifam Bekrat Nechashim, so he stopped going like the previous times after his snakes or his sorcery, Vayashet El Midbar Panav. He turns his face simply to the desert. I'm not going to go into describing exactly what this means, but the pasuk makes it clear that the first two curses, Bilam did try to use a non-kosher form of communication with God. Vayisad Bilam et Einav, and Bilam raises his eyes. Vayaret Yisrael, he sees Israel shochein l'shvatav, in its sitting in its tribes, which means militarily, sitting in its four encampments. Vatihi alav ruach Elohim, and he is infused with the Spirit of God. Vayisam mashalo, and he raises up his parable. Vayomar, and he says, Ne'um Bilam, so says Bilam, Bino Baor, the son of Baor, Ne'um hagever, and this is the speech of the man, Shetum ha'ayin, the one with the weak eyes, or the runny eyes, or the broken eyes. Again, I don't want to do this. It's excellent stuff to go word by word to find out what he's talking about. Why is he calling himself the weak in eyes, and the portion go into it. But that's not what I want to focus on. Ne'um shomea imre el. This is the speech of somebody who hears the words of God. He's got quite an ego, by the way, our friend Bilam. Asher machazei shaddai yechazeh. The visions of the awesome God he does see. And he's obviously speaking about himself. Nofel ugalui enayim. Fallen and the revealed eyes. Let's continue on. And then, of course, some of the most famous psukim in all the Torah. Ma tovu o'alecha Yaakov mishkanotecha Yisrael. How great are your tents, Yaakov, and your Shechina, Israel. Now, he's talking militarily, and he's giving Bilam quite a clue, by the way. See, that's the trick here. Bilam is giving Balak quite a clue. He knows he can't curse them, but I strongly feel, and one day when we get a chance to do this, he is doing his best within the confines of a blessing to curse the Jews as much as he can. He's talking about the military setup. I realize the famous Medrash, what is Matovu Alecha Yisrael? That the doors of the tents, you're familiar with this, right, all faced away from each other so they couldn't look into each other's bedrooms. That's not what an ohel means for a military encampment. An ohel means a military encampment. A machaneh is not a camp like kids go to. A machaneh is a military encampment. And if you remember the way that the military encampment was, this was a military spiritual battle place. There was the four Degalim, and there was the Shechina, the Mishkan, was in the middle. And Vayihi ben Saharon Vayom Moshe Kum Hashem Yafutzo Oyvecha Mipanecha. You know, the enemies would be scattered before the walking, as they started to march, the Aron would go first, maybe it's Machlok, if there's a lot of discussion, then Yehuda would follow after. This was a battle. That's what he is describing to Balak. Well, let's continue. It gets more interesting. He's a fascinating guy, though, I tell you. There's so much to his words, but let me show you the great stuff here. Even better. The one that's pertinent, anyway. Matovu olacha Yaakov, mishkanotecha Yisrael. What pasuk are we on? I lost my place. Love. Okay, now we're on. Yeah, love. Kinechalim natayu, you're planted like rivers, kiganot, and like gardens ale nahar, on the banks of the waters. Kaaholim nata Hashem, like tents God has planted you, ka'arazim ale mayim, like erez, or cedar trees, on the rivers of water. Yizal mayim idalyo, water will flow out of its bucket. Vizaro b'mayim rabim, and it will, and from the abundance of water, do the plantations grow. Vayarom me Agag Malko v'tinase Malkuto. And it is stronger than Agag, his kingdom, and it will be carried his rulership. Again, I want to stay away from what that might mean and what does it have to do with Shmuel's Agag. There are all kinds of questions here, but I'm getting to the... If you thought this was a good part, wait for two psukim. El motziom Mitzrayim, God has taken them out of Egypt. Kito afot re'im lo. I believe that means with strength, like the horns of a ram. Yochal goyim tsarav, they eat their enemies. Va'atzmotehem yigareim, they chew up their bones, or they smash their bones. V'chitzav yimchatz, and their arrows they smash. Look at these words. I'm not even going to read it. Take a look at Pasuk 10.
I haven't been watching the Hebrew. It's a plural English. But the English has Hashem doing all these things.
Yeah. This is what Hashem is doing to them. Yigareim v'chitzav yimchatz. That he's destroyed their enemies. Yeah, it's probably Hashem. Now, look in the Hebrew. Just glance at the Hebrew for Pasuk text. Don't say anything. See if you notice something that has to do with our Parsha. Any two words jump out at you?
Yeah, the same two words that they described that happened to Sisera.
That's right. Yes. The seduction of Sisera. Kara shachav ke'ari uchlavi mi kumeno. He bows down and he sleeps. Ka'ari. Oh, it needs the nofel. Yeah. He's got that in one of his other, I believe it's there in one of his other prophecies. Uklavi mi kimeno, and who will get up like a lion? Mivarecha baruch, your blessed are blessed, and your cursed are cursed. Kara shachav. Now, Devorah knows Bilam's muscle. Okay? She knows the Torah back and forth. She's quoting him directly. Kara shachav. These are the only places where you find those two words together. And they appear, the word shachav appears in a previous prophecy by Bilam, but here he puts together kara shachav. Now we know, when we look at this, it's hard, if you're just reading Bilam, it's hard to know what it's talking about. Kara, he bends down, shachav, he sleeps, ka'ari, like a lion, ukilavi mi kimeno, and like a young lion, who will stand before him? It's hard to say what Bilam is talking about, but Devorah gives us context. Devorah gives us context. The context is that those words mean, they're indicating lasciviousness. They're indicating lasciviousness. Now, why is that important? Keep in mind...
But the shot of this is not hard to understand.
Go ahead.
In the previous sentence, the subject is God. In this sentence, it would still be God.
How does the English read on this? Karasha Chavkari.
Well, you know, the God is the subject, and the God who is laying in wait like a lion, and like a lion, who can stand before him?
I don't think this is talking about God. I think it's talking about Bnei Yisrael. We should get Mefarshim down, but I'm pretty sure it's talking about...
the subject, the previous subject,
yeah.
Of God.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I don't think God is being described like a lion.
I also have a problem with it, because it seems to me that the story goes that Hashem was watching Bilam and saying, "You can only say what I want you to say."
Right.
And I find it hard to believe that God would know that he was trying to sneak into Egypt.
He did. But keep in mind, you know, it's a famous John Milton thing. You always have to, a person always has to have free will. The challenge that we have in understanding Bilam is, where was Bilam's free will? Was he just a robot? I would suggest that Bilam is a lot like Avimelech. Which is, it's not that you can't say what you want. It's not what you can say that's forced. It's what you can't say that you're limited to. Now, again, I can't prove this for sure, but keep in mind, and here's the shocker, when I teach Bilam in detail, these three prophecies, and each prophecy, again, it's a shear, so with a shear, we tend to ignore the words because they're so difficult, we don't analyze them. If you analyze them closely, these three prophecies, each one is trying to get off a specific message. Keep in mind the Medrash of Chazal. Remember the Medrash of Chazal? The pshat is, it's talking about military. That's the pshat. But the famous Medrash of Chazal was that, why are they so great? Because their tents are put in such a way that their doors don't look at each other, so they can't see what the other family members, the other man and wife, are doing in the other person's tent. The tents are specifically set up opposite, so they can't look in each other's windows. If you remember, do you remember when Yitzchak and Rivka are fooling around by Yimpsachek, and Avimelech is looking in their window and says, how come you didn't tell me you were man and wife? Obviously, they were doing something that Avimelech was, from Avimelech, who's the king of the people, so the king of the people looked in people's windows. So you think it's just
a... They were there.
He was looked there at Chachalon. They were, he looked in the window. Where is it by Bereshit?
Always thought that they were outside.
Nah.
He looked outside. Yeah.
I don't think so.
That's
no, why would
they picture right now? Well, maybe They don't explain it that way.
Well, they probably don't expect that they were fooling around, but the word Masachet means they were fooling around.
Right.
Whereas, in fact, it's the only time that you really see it. It's very interesting. You see a very intimacy between Yitzchak. I realize Yitzchak and Rivka don't talk much, if at all.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very quiet characters, but it's the only time that you actually see kind of a physical relationship between two of our parents. Where is it? It's in Bereshit. I would have thought Kayesara, no? Hold on. Or maybe Toldot.
Mm.
Yeah, it would be in Toldot. Here it is. Yeah, here it is. It's in, if you're curious, it's in 26:8. Vayihi kiyacholo shamayanim. He was with the Plishtim a long time. Vayashkev abimelech v'plishtim ba'ad acholon. He looked in the window. I mean, that's, unless I'm reading this wrong, that's their window. Vayar, and he saw Vine Yitzchak Mitzachet, the Rivka Ishto. Who knows, his wife. I mean, he was making her happy. Vayikrav Melch Yitzchak, Vayomar, etc., etc. So the idea of voyeurism is an existing concept. And here's the important thing to remember with Bilam. Bilam's mashalim are satire for the Jewish people. And I will tell you why. The Jewish people who are reading Bilam's story are the Jewish people who will sin horribly. Right after the Bilam story, right, Bilam is defeated. Well, what's the first story that we encounter immediately after Bilam? Who shows up right after Bilam? What event happens after Bilam? Look at Parakhah. What's that? It's Pinchas' story. Which was with who? What kind of girls? What was the girl there? The Midianite girls. Now keep in mind that...
It's a different battle. I mean, Moab and Midian were not allied anymore, right?
Where? Here in Shokin.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. Oh, that's why, that's exactly what I'm trying to say, David. I don't know what it means. Not only that, where Midian hits them with lasciviousness here, it has to do with the Avodah Zarah and worshipping the Midianite girls. It was all about assimilating into Midianite culture. That was what it was. That was the threat.
That was the advice of Bilam in the first
place. Exactly right. And if you take, so now if you understand Karav Shachav, what advice, immediately after Karav v'Shachav, after he tells them the Karav v'Shachav, which we don't even know what it means until Devorah translates it for us, all of a sudden who shows up? The Midianite girls. Which means, sure, he had to bless them, but you're able to stick a lot of good advice into a blessing. And in fact, what you could do, I don't want to do it now, but if you look at the three...
Well, that's the advice came more explicitly much later.
No, I don't think it was.
He never says. He never tells him what to do.
The only reason you know that Bilam was involved there is because they kill him then.
Yeah, that's true. No, Bilam's advice is never explicit. In fact, right after he tells that advice, Balak gets so upset he smashes his hand, walks off. But the interesting thing is, he gives him good advice to conquer the Jewish people three times. Three times. And Bilam doesn't get it. Bilam's an idiot. Sorry, not Balak. Balak doesn't get it. Balak's something of an idiot. It's not the Midianite girls got it, and then maybe Balak in the end figured it out what he was talking about. But when he says Karanafa, keep in mind, all of the brachot of Bilam have to be satire for the Jewish people. Think about what the first bracha says. Who are the Jewish people? They never sin, God never, and therefore God will never let them down. They're not reading this at the time. They're not there at the time. They're reading this. If these stories are given as they go, they're probably reading this after what event? After the Midian event. So they're reading after the Midian event where they've just been sinned. Shimon has just lost 40,000 of its own people in their civil war against Levi. And they're reading these words about how God will never forsake them because the Jewish people never sin. They've got to be having a good laugh, a good cynical laugh out of that. So Bilam uses these words, Kara Shachav, and then the next, which seemed to indicate, based on Devorah, some kind of sexuality. The next moment, Midian shows up with his girls and causes this whole conflict, which is based on the fact that Moshe is married to a Midianite. And don't forget, what was the insult that they called Pinchas? Pinchas was called Ben Puti, Mia Ben Puti Azeh. Why? Because he was the son of Eleazar, who had married Puti, who's also a Midianite girl. This is the whole conflict. How could you, Zimri said, how could you tell me not to sleep with a Midianite girl? You're married to one. And this Pinchas, who's trying to kill people, he's the child of one. This whole conflict with the Midianite people, because on one hand, they were friends with the Jewish people, but on the other hand, there was the potential for assimilation with evil. So here again, I want to say, I don't know what it means. But what's interesting is, Karana Fal Shachav, we've got this strange words, which are followed by the attack of the Midianites. And then in Shoftim again, you've got the Jewish people have just conquered the Canaanites, just like in Bamidbar. Show up the word Kara Nafal Shafav, Kara Nafal Shachav. You've got this relationship, this physical relationship with the Midianite girl. And then the Midianites in force show up to cause problems with the Jewish people, just like they caused battle. Right? There's a battle against the Midianites, right? We don't find out about it until later, but in Bamidbar Perek Lamed or so, what does Hashem say? Hashem says, take revenge upon the Midianite people and go and attack them, right? And he goes and attacks them. He takes a humongous amount of sheep and property away from the Midianites. So too, right after this Karash Shachav incident, the same two words, once again, we have the battle with the Midianites. What does it mean? I haven't the foggiest. But there's no way it could be a coincidence. No. There's no way. I just don't know. I could be a pulpit rabbi and say, well, it has to do with assimilation, and the Midianites represented assimilation because they were friendly with the Jews, and therefore we went after them in a sexual manner and started to, where other people it was Avodah Zarah, with them it was sexuality. I could go and, make up a whole good Shabbat speech for people, but to be honest, I don't know what it means. I just know I can't ignore it. It's fascinating stuff. Right after the same two words, Karan, Nafal, Shachav, show up the Midianites for a battle, both in the Torah and once again here. And that's what that famous line is, right? Which I'm sure you know. What is it? Siman Av, Maase Av Siman Labanim. Now that's very often used homiletically, which is, this was an example to set forward. The fathers would do it and it would set an example for the children so the children would know what to do. That's a homiletic way of looking at it. A much more Kabbalistic way of doing it is that there are cycles in the life cycle of not only the Jewish people, but the universal people. And they're things that simply repeat themselves, built into, the meta-DNA of what human beings are. What does Kara Nafal have to do with the Midianites showing up? I mean, what secret is being revealed there that repeats itself because it always repeats itself? It's built into the very cyclical nature of what human beings are? That I have no idea, but I know it's here in front of me. And I that's what I find fascinating, actually. Any thoughts? Or you're not that excited about it?
Only because the whole Quran, the Paul thing, does read, whether you read it as God as a subject or Israel as a subject,
go ahead.
It works. At least it seems to work.
You mean it reads militarily?
Yeah.
I agree. And if
that it's related to these immorality that follows is a stretch. In fact, the Quran, the Paul, as strictly read immorality in Devorah's song, is still a stretch. It's a good stretch, but it doesn't have to read.
Oh, I don't know. I have a hard time. Ben Raglehav Kara Nafal, between her legs he falls and he bows, Shachav. I have a hard time reading it any other way than sexually. I can't see it any other way. You mean like a person that's suppressed under, you have somebody, a victor standing over somebody militarily as they fall beneath them. I would be okay with that, except for the fact that it says, Ben Raglehav Kara Nafal Shachav.
It seems to impress you, but I think I've seen that frequently, where it doesn't mean anything sexual. Have you just saw it in last week's podcast? It had to do with animals, but it simply meant their product, or their children, their offspring. It didn't have a sexual connotation.
I'd have to see the words. And Chazal, of course, are convinced of the sexual connotation.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, it reads well, but... Right. But if it reads well there, therefore it must read well here, it's still a stretch. I don't know.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with it. No, wow.
That's okay. If I get a chance another time, I don't know if we ever get around to doing Chumash when we come around, I could show you the three brachot and the way that Eben Ezra understands them. And he understands them as a hidden curse. Each one of the three brachot, the Eben Ezra says quite clearly, are a hidden curse.
Yeah, I remember reading that. But this, even here, the Karash Shachav, if you did read it as somehow a weakness or
if you had to pick the act here,
then the rest of it really doesn't follow. The Kari and the Kalavini Pimeno is a sign of strength and prosperity or victory. You wouldn't have those two items in the same sense, would you?
I don't know. I think possibly. I mean, what you're saying is right. The answer I would give you, I'm not sure it's a totally satisfying answer, is Bilam, as Anne said, Bilam is to a certain sense, force. He cannot curse the Jewish people. He must bless the Jewish people. So you have to sort of struggle against the, you have to swim against the tide in order to insert anything in. So yes, he has to, Rabbi David, who is a rabbi in West Orange, I heard him say, what is Matovu Alecha Yaakov? It was very simple. Was it?
Rabbi David?
David. Do you remember David in West Orange?
West Orange?
Not West Orange. West Hempstead.
Oh.
Yeah, he teaches in... I'm sorry, that's the other mecca of... it's another mecca of Long Island. It's sort of the main community for Hebrew Academy in Nassau County, as opposed to Kushner. So he says, what is Mato of Alach Yaakov? He's saying, listen, Balak, you can't battle them. Look at their armies. You know, you can't take that on. Try something else. I agree with him. I think that something else is stitched into the words. I guess since we're already there, let me show you the other one of Balak, which the Eben Ezra says is important.
But wait a minute. Just,
yeah, go ahead.
Just a minute.
You can beat me up on this. It's okay. I don't mind.
No, I'm looking for the looking for it. 24.
In 23 of the first Balak.
I was just saying that, you know, when he's telling how great he is, it says here in English, who sees the vision of the Almighty falling down the hand with eyes open. That sounds like a classic description of someone who is totally immersed in a vision from Hashem. And this person is not thinking and constructing his words to hide a curse in him. He's totally, he's been taken over basically by Hashem and he's just a mouse.
I can prove that that's not true from Bilam's own words. Bilam says, this time, the third time, I'm not going to use Kshafim. I'm not going to use Nechashim. Which means on the first two, he was. Mm-hmm. So again, yeah, God is telling him, you're going to do a bracha here. But obviously, Bilam is doing whatever he can to fight against that. Bilam wants the Jews dead. How do we know that for sure? Because Bilam goes to battle with the Midianites and gets his head cut off. Bilam is not a big fan of Jewish people. And why is a separate issue? There's a big conflict between Bilam and Avram. There's all kinds of interesting things going on there. But Bilam clearly doing whatever he can to fight against it.
Well,
I think it may use the word mashal, because mashal is a lower form of prophecy. Mm-hmm. That is, mashal, when we think of a prophecy in the Bible, of course, we think of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was essentially directly in tune with God, and what was coming out of his mouth was essentially what Hashem wanted him to say. I think he had to understand how to put it into a Lashon of Adam, but I think it was almost a direct word for word. I don't think other Nevi'im, Lokam B'Yisrael K'moshe El Navi, you know, while we say that Bilam was a high level, I'm not sure Bilam was at that level that he would be able to translate.
Just have to remember that Bilam is something of a showman, mm-hmm. and this could be described in the method by which he impressed the king. He's also probably a Greek, you know, dwarf or a guy who has some kind of physical
capacity. Why would you say that?
Because the whole business is referring to his open eye or his closed
eye. Oh, that
eye.
Is some strength, yeah.
And
yeah.
There is some commentary that says, more than likely, and it was not uncommon apparently, to set up priests that were dwarfs or in some
way
different.
Well, actually, or blind people, because right. they were considered to have a second
right.
sight, because
so
they relied on...
So Bilam may very well have been one of those characters, you know, outlandish garb, some kind of disfigurement, maybe blind, and put on a big show whenever he did one of his, you know, prophecies. And this may very well just be described in the show.
Right, although we do say that he was in tune with God,
yeah.
and Chazal do have an in tune with God.
Not denying that he was, but that
yeah.
he was a showman, and that's how he sold himself, but if he knew of him, etc., is not out of character.
And I think there are always the words, except for Moshe Rabbeinu, there is the person, in any prophecy, there is a personality of the Navi. Mm-hmm. Let me show you the first prophecy, which is in 23:8.
I think that's true when a person speaks out of Ruach or Kodesh. But I think when a person is basically becomes a conduit, which happens when a person is such that he just falls down and is overwhelmed. And I think that's a typical...
It could be. I just... I see... I agree with the Eben Ezra here. Actually, the better one is in Yotet 19, 23:19, which is just, a brilliant rib into the Jewish people. And keep in mind, this is being read by the Jewish people post-sin of the Midianites. This is not being read by the Jews. This is happening a month or two before they go into Eretz Israel. Mm-hmm. They are very recently on the death of many Jews based on all these troubles. Lo ish el v'chazev. God is not a man to lie. Uven Adam Bietnachem, he is not like a man that he's going to forgive. Hahu Amar Velo Yaseh, has he, whatever he says he's going to do, Vidiber Velo Yikimena, don't you think he's going to keep whatever he prompts to do? There's that word Yikimena, by the way, which shows up later. Hine Barech Lakafi Uberech Lo Ashiveno. He gave I took a blessing, and a blessing will not be returned. Lo Hibit Aben Biakov. Now here again, this is satire to my mind. Lo Hibit Aben Biakov, this is being read post-Midian girls. Wouldn't they laugh a little? That's like saying Jewish politics in Eretz Yisrael, that's the honest politics I've ever seen. I have never seen anything wrong with politics, with Israeli politics. It's got to make you laugh.
And even if it weren't, the implication earlier is that God doesn't forgive either.
Exactly,
so
right.
Sin,
so if you sin,
going to get that?
That's exactly what Eben Ezra says. Eben Ezra says what he's trying to say is, listen, right now the Jewish people are not sinning, so there's nothing you can do. And I'm going to give you a bracha, because Hashem's not allowing me to say, cause them to do this. All I could say to you, Balak, wink, wink, is God will never forgive. Whatever he says, he'll promise. What does he say? It's very clear. He said in Shema, he said, if you keep the Torah and the mitzvot, you get this. And if you go, v'zanu acharei levavachem, etc., then you get punished. All you have to do is follow the Jewish law and get the Jewish people to transgress the Jewish law, and they get nailed automatically. You hear? It's a brilliant sin. It's a brilliant curse. The truth is, I'm so impressed by Bilam, because he's managed to take words of bracha and managed to give Balak everything he needs to curse the Jewish people. Lo he beat Aben Biakov, lo ra'a mal b'Yisrael. Oh my goodness, the Jews had to have a good laugh about that one. Hashem Elohav imo utruat melech bo, el motzeh mitzrayim tvareim lo, hilo nachash b'Yakov. There is no nachash b'Yakov. What are you talking about? Do you remember the nachash incident? Remember the nachash incident with the nachash, the burning nachashim that came when they tried to go against Moshe? Velo kesem b'Yisrael. There's nobody doing samim. Ka'eti amar le'Yakov Yisrael mipael ha'im. Here it is again. Hinei am kilavi yakum ukari yitnasa lo yishkav ad yochal teref. They do not lie down to sleep until they eat.
He likes that line analogy.
Yes, it repeats. But this time he only uses shachad. The next time he uses karav shachad. I believe the reason why he does that is because Balak didn't get it the first time. That's why Balak was upset. I think he had to make it more explicit. And he managed to get away with it. Now again, without Devorah telling us karav nafal, there's no way we would have known that there was sexual connotation. Even though the next thing that shows up to the Jewish people, the problems with sexuality with the Midianites. With Devorah, and I agree with you, David, with Devorah we only have an impression, either Devorah is trying to interpret the Bilam for us, or she's not. If she's, well, actually there's two possibilities. Either we're reading Devorah correctly or not, and if we're reading it correctly that she's talking about sexuality, then either Devorah is trying to explicitly translate Bilam's words or not. I believe the answer is yes on both, and therefore I think she's telling it. We're telling us a brilliant thing.
Another possibility: the same author, not here, but in there, who knows this text well, that he ultimately uses the same style and vocabulary, isn't terribly surprising. It doesn't necessarily mean there's a connection. It only means this is what the guy, the way his style
right.
of writing is.
Right. Well, we've discussed this before, and you brought up this point before. I agree with the point, but I always believe that it's more, because I believe the message of any Navi writing it is not only to express a literary point, but to express a thematic and moral and religious point. And therefore, when the textual appearances are made, I agree with you, they're made for literary style and effect, I agree. But I also believe they're made for spiritual effect as well. So I don't want to ignore, you know, I realize that a lot of people, especially
like,
you know, in the
from if it's, you know, Torah Sinai, you need a Rashi, and every word has a connotation.
Right.
Okay. But if it's Shmuel, granted he had Ruach HaKodesh, it still isn't Moshe and Hashem.
That's correct.
And he has literary control.
Yes. The reason why I always go with, and I guess it is a fundamental approach that I have to Tanakh, and then I think we should probably close it up, is the reason why I always take this approach is because I get great enjoyment out of seeing the Nevi'im as being the first perishim. Like when we think of a Perush on Torah, we think of Rashi, Ramban, Eben Ezra. I think of Shmuel, Devorah. I think it's Shmuel, I think Devorah did sing these words. I don't think Devorah was making up. She was an earlier prophet. And I see them as being perishim. Like you'd have the Torah. I mean, they must have been giving shiurim. Torah must have been giving shiurim. I can't believe she wasn't sitting around a table, you know, giving a weekly shiur in Tanakh.
There was no texts. Nobody had a printing press. They
right. She would teach the Torah and she'd explain to people what it meant.
Yeah.
And even though... what's that? What?
Well, sure she did.
That too. Oh, that's the question whether a woman's allowed to be a dayan, which we got into. Or
well,
Ramella.
I mean, the women don't learn.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh no, absolutely. Yeah, I think she taught them everything.
Because there was continuity through the ages. Somebody had to be doing it.
Right, and I don't. Well, you could look again if you were a biblical critic. You could say that Chazal, when they came up with their own homiletic and midrash interpretations, that was brand new. They made it up for their own purposes, and period. There was no Masorah. But I just don't agree with that. I don't feel that that's correct. And I see Dvorah's words.
That argument, when you stand here 3,000 years later, and it's still fairly well intact. So it can't. It's
like somebody just made it up from that period.
Yeah, how good were they?
Oh, absolutely right. Not only that, we have both the Book of the Maccabees, which we did here, where we show that they believe in Tfiyat HaMetim from the time of the beginning of Bayit Sheni. So certainly, it wasn't invented at the end of Bayit Sheni. I mean, there are many proofs against. But ultimately, it's always possible to be critical. But I just get a great pleasure of the idea. In my mind, it gives me such satisfaction to picture Dvorah sitting around and saying, "Gentlemen, you know what the Quran Afal was? The Midianites were coming, and this is what Bilam was telling. And you want to know something? It worked beautifully, just like it's working in our favor here." I guess really where I started is, why do we have the same pattern? And I don't know, but I love seeing these kind of consistencies in the Torah against Navi. Because to me, it speaks about a purity of the Torah, but it also speaks to me about the dedication of the Navi to, you know, to show that the Torah is repeating itself on a regular basis.
Well, and then that is clearly the foundation for everything there. And that's, I think, that's part of the point. It's clear.
Right. You know? Right, right. But not only because people say, well, this is what we, you know, this is what we should do because the Torah says so, but also because this is what we have to do because it's sort of built into the very structure.